They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit, there'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 229. Don't sweat it, it's only $100 million. My name is Matthew Turner, alongside Anthony Fitzpatrick, Ryan McCluskey, and Ashley Soden. How you doing, boys?
Killing. But that's why I pulled out the icy white stuff, just got off at eBay. It's the perfect time to wear it.
Yeah, cold. Cold is the word. It's very chilly.
I'm quite cozy. I'm used to it up here. I'm only about 2 miles down from England's highest town. So I Queensbury is not far from me. So yeah, I am very up north. But no, fine. Rocking the new merch for anyone that is interested. 5'9", wearing medium, if anyone wants a size guide. That's all I can tell you.
Is it roughly a good fit at that size?
Yeah, quite snug.
Good. Right, let's get on with this. I'm sorry we weren't with you this week with the bye week, but we are here today and we are taking a look back at the first half of the Lions season. We're going to do some self-scouting. We're going to go through the news. We're then going to take you through the records and we're going to scout like we would do any opponent coming up this week. And apart from we're having a look at ourselves, we're going to have a talk about what we like overall about the team, what we like and don't like on offense and defense, little wrinkles that we found here and there. We're going to do some mid-season awards, just some shout-outs for who's done well so far. We're going to have a look ahead to the remaining games and have a look at projections for individual players as well. And then we're going to be taking your questions off the air. So if you do want to get some extra time with us, you need to be live with us on YouTube and Twitch. And one of the best ways to find out about when we're going live is by joining our Discord channel. So the link is going in the YouTube and Twitch chats right now. If you haven't joined us there, it's a fantastic place. Oh, that is not the link. Don't follow that. Give me a second. But do come and join us there because it is a really good place to chat with us all week and chat all sports and Lions and whatever. So it'd be great to see you there. College Football Podcast is coming up this week. Boys, I mean, it feels like there's never a dull weekend in college football, but another big one in the books.
Yeah, there's only 3 weeks left now, so enjoy it while you can. Season's nearly over. But yeah, a lot of good stuff went on this weekend, so we'll be recapping that as always. Come join us. I don't know when it'll be yet, but it will be at some point. I'm just trying to work it around work.
And don't forget to like the show, sub to the podcast, and rate and review and all that good stuff. You know what to do. And add Lions Nation Unite on their Facebook group. It's facebook.com/groups/LionsNationUnite. That's Home and Moore's project to bring the best in Lions content creators together. And we are Twitch affiliated, YouTube monetized, and there's a tip jar down below. If you're enjoying the show and want to show some appreciation in that fashion, it's much appreciated. We also have a feedback form in the YouTube description if you want to give any feedback, any thoughts for content or any sort of formatting changes or anything like that. All thoughts are welcome. And as you can see from Ryan's shirt and Ant's hoodie as well, our merch store is live. It's a great way to support the show. If you don't want to just donate willy-nilly, you want to get something back for it, that's a really great way of doing it. And it's good stuff. Look, legitimately, it's really nice stuff. So please go and do that. Right, news. And we touched on this, me and Ash, before, but now Ryan and Ant, you are both here. We'll just briefly touch on this with the Lions trading a 2025 sixth for Donovan Peoples-Jones. Ant, Ryan, what do you make of the move? It was the only move on deadline day for us, and it has divided opinion, should we say.
It's a sixth round pick, really, isn't it? It's late day three pick. You need a guy at the receiver room. We are a little light on depth. So, you know, why not bring a guy who's familiar with the state? He's a local, he knows the team well. And, you know, this is a guy who got good production in the NFL. It's not like he's a scrub. Like, who's just been going around a ton of teams, practice squads, and hasn't done anything. He's been a legitimate pass catcher in the NFL for a bad team and some bad quarterbacks. So I like it. An inexpensive move on the third day. And if he lands, you give him a new deal. You've got some really good depth in your wide receiver room. I like it. I love DPJ in the NFL. So, yeah, bring him in. All for it.
It's okay. It wasn't the position I wanted to move at. It was probably the third position I'd have strengthened. Like I say, he's been good on a bad team. I expect him to hit the ground running. I won't make any excuses for him because I've seen what he can do. So I expect him to come in and instantly try get on the stat sheet. With signing him long term, he's going to have to do a lot to convince me that he's going to get a deal over Josh Reynolds, because you don't keep them both. Like I say, he's coming in, like I say, to try take his spot on the team next year, I feel like. But yeah, he's younger. He's a bit, maybe a bit bigger. Like I said, not as good a blocker, but potentially maybe a bit of a flashy receiver. So we'll see. Let's see how quickly he hits the ground running with 2 weeks, 2 weeks to get under his belt. And yeah, a lot of people like him because obviously he's got connections to the state and a lot of people on it. So yeah, well, it can't be any worse than Trenton Benson. I'd expect it to be a lot better than that trade. I certainly hope so anyway. So yeah, but he's had some time with the team now. He could come out and have a, he could just take the scruff of the neck by a receiver room that, I don't know, flattered to deceive, I think. I say it's been good, but it's not been great. There's something been missing.
I think the underrated thing about the move is that, assuming that he does well, whether we re-sign him or not, I think we can potentially get the capital back. And I don't make this statement lightly, because a lot of people like making this statement and they're uninformed. I do think that we're not really in a position to be buyers in free agency, because I think the majority of our free cap space is going to go towards re-signing current players. So letting people go to the open market and get re-signed somewhere is a way of getting capital back. And I wouldn't be surprised if DPJ did quite well here, but not good enough to get a new deal because we pay Reynolds. And then he goes and gets himself a deal which gets us a sixth in 2025 back. That just wouldn't surprise me at all. And we get half a season of depth at X receiver, which we sorely need.
Exactly. It's tied to the Marvin move for me, in a loose way, in the fact that with Marvin going, we did lose that sort of big body contested catch guy, which is what DPJ is really good at. I think two seasons ago, he was like 80% contested catch success rate, which is really damn good. And he brings special team stuff. He's returned kicks and punts before, so there's a little bit more depth back there. So if anything happens to Leaf, or if something happens to Craig, we need someone to return a kickoff, he can do that. So it's tied to the Marvin news and the Khalil Dorsey news, because obviously he got injured against the Ravens and he was one of our main kick returner. So it's just a gross moment. I liked it last week when we made it and when we were discussing it. Still like it now. Perhaps wasn't as big as high profile as fans, including me, were hoping, but I like the move even more with a week of hindsight.
Rest of the news, Lions cut running back Divine Azigbo, and Scott Daly, the long snapper, goes to IR, which is a real shame. He's had successful surgery, so he'll be back in the off-season, but I think that's probably him done for the season. Not quite sure, but probably. To replace him, Jake McQuaid is back on the practice squad. I think you can safely assume he's going to get two elevations and then get signed before the third one. It always seems to be the way. It's a way for us to get him a bit cheaper for two games. Can't hurt. And we have signed Trevor Nowaski, the linebacker from Saginaw State? Saginaw Valley State, that's the one. So he came in as an undrafted free agent, as a local, made it to the practice squad. Had a really good preseason, in fact. He was a preseason warrior. And Dan Campbell, in the last half an hour, has confirmed that he was signed to avoid an unnamed team poaching him to their active roster, which is really interesting. But this being silly season for injuries, it almost doesn't surprise me that someone is scraping the barrel for our practice squad for a 53-man special team linebacker potentially with upside to start at some point maybe next year. The other news from Dan Campbell is that Montgomery, Jonah, and Ragnow are all trending towards returning from injury for the Chargers game after having missed the Las Vegas game. Boys, does the Nowaski news surprise you, or is it just it's that time of year?
It's a both. I remember when it first came out, I was a bit confused as well. But it kind of makes sense. Like we saw, I'm going to use the Cards example because they've actually been kind of doing that the past year. They signed Josh Woodsmus in the past off season, who did the Nowaski kind of role. They got Starling Thomas when we cut him, who would have gone back to our practice squad, and he was making plays for them on Sunday. He was really balling out for them. So I think it's teams are waking up to our ability to spot talent, and any single time they have a need there, we're one of the teams they look at now. We've sort of joined the echelons of what the Patriots used to be, what the Ravens are, what the Bills are, what the Eagles are, where teams are looking to our scraps because our scraps could be a lot better for them than unnamed 30-year-old veteran on the free agent market who will come in and demand a like 70% fully guaranteed one-year deal because that's what they're able to command. About to get something cheaper with a bit better potential and upside off our practice squad rather than getting some 30-year-old who has a dodgy knee.
Yeah, I'm not saying Dan's a liar, but I would question how desperate you have to be to sign Trevor Nowaski to 53, if I'm perfectly honest. He's a special teamer, and I don't think he's anything more, to be honest. So I find it odd to protect him. Right, so if yeah, I don't know. I don't see him having any impact that's not on kickoff or punt return, to be honest. I don't want to see him on the field on defense. I think he's a long way from that. But we'll see. Yeah, it could just genuinely be a cost cutting exercise. So I'm going to bring him in.
I mean, you know, Dan and Brad like very specific type of players, and I think they're very difficult for them to come by. So when you get someone like Nowaski, like Ryan says, he's probably a long way off seeing the field as a defender, as like a pivotal part of the team, but you've got to break them in somewhere. You've got to start them somewhere. And, you know, we've always placed high emphasis on special teams, and, you know, there's a process there. Like the process of getting to the Super Bowl, it is long and arduous. And sometimes with these guys, you don't want to lose them because you know what they can be down the line. They might not be that yet, but you know what they can be. And if the opportunity is there to be able to protect them and to keep them out of the clutches of someone else, then great, go for it. Because it's obvious they like him. Coming from an FCS school, small school, you know, it's, you know, going to... Very specific type of player. So I'm not surprised. They've shown a lot of faith in him. They've kept him around and they see a longer term project there with him. And no doubt when the time is right, they'll return him off the 53 elsewhere. And, you know, so I'm not too fussed with it. I just think they're very specific type of guys and they will do this to keep them. So, you know, trust the process with them. Hopefully it'll become something good in the future.
All right, let's start some self-scouting. And the Lions come into the bye week at 6-2. Pro Football Reference has the number of expected wins at 4.9. So they believe the Lions are 1.1 wins over expectation. They started with a win against Kansas City, a loss against Seattle, wins against Atlanta, Green Bay, Carolina, Tampa, and then a loss against Baltimore and a win against Las Vegas. On IR currently is Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Is it CD Deuce officially? No one knows. Emmanuel Mosley, Jason Kabinda, Nate Sudfeld, Matt Nelson, Shane Zylstra, Scott Daly, James Houston, Donovan Knight, Mo Ibrahim are all on IR and on the Nottingham Football injury list because he still hasn't effectively come off it since he was drafted, is Hendon Hooker. Although, by all accounts, he could probably come back any time. They just don't need to waste the roster spot at this point.
Yeah, Dan mentioned that a tiny bit in his press conference, saying they're not there yet with him, but they don't know what he's fully got until he's on the 53. And Jeremy did tweet out from the Friday Tweet account that it's more matter of when than if potentially with Hooker. So he could be getting elevated by the end of the season.
Could well be, wouldn't surprise me. Let's talk about the team in general. And I'm going to throw in a little snippet of some stats I found as well for you, some interesting things. The Lions are, per PFF, the fourth overall team with an 87 grade. They're second on offense with 82.1, joint 14th on defense with 72.5, and 19th on special teams at 72.2. Contrast that with DVOA, which has the Lions sixth overall. They're sixth on offense, seventh on defense, and 12th on special teams. So despite them ranking us higher in everything apart from offense, we are lower overall by DVOA, but who's counting? Some team tendencies for you. The Lions are third in the NFL in time of possession with 33 minutes, 38 seconds average time of possession per game. So they are doing their opponents at 7 minutes a game, or have time of possession 7 minutes more than their opponents. They're third in first down 12 personnel percentage. They are 30th in first down shotgun formation. They are second in the single back rate, therefore. We are 31st in average depth of target in the NFL. We are 28th in versus the sticks throws, which means throwing behind the sticks, which is not ideal. So we're second in fourth down go for it percentage, which I don't think anyone's going to be surprised by. We're 29th in no huddle percentage, so we do not run tempo compared to basically anyone in the league. However, all of the teams in the bottom seven, apart from the Titans, are really good teams. Good teams don't need to run no huddle because they're not behind in the last 5 minutes. So I thought that was quite interesting. Goff is number one in the NFL in percentage of on-target throws. He's second in play-action attempts, and he is last in numbers of RPO throws. So that's just some rough statistics out there that I thought was pretty general, but all the metrics seem to indicate, apart from the expected wins total, boys, that this team is legitimately good. Even DVOA, which is taking, you know, defense-adjusted metrics into it, still think that this is a really good team. And time of possession would certainly seem to indicate that the team's identity is being followed. As a high-level, boys, before we go into the offense and defense in more detail, Ryan, I'll come to you first. What do you think about this team overall? You come in here, we're 6-2. Do you think that we're good value for 6-2? Are you confident for the rest of the season? How's it making you feel right now?
So 6-2 is one game of where I had ahead of where I had us. We essentially are a coin flip away from 7-1, which is fair to say. Get the ball first against Seattle. Good chance we win. So that one is very... After seeing what happened yesterday, I feel much better because now I realise the Ravens are probably the second best team in the NFL. And I feel pretty confident saying that, if not the best. After what they did to Seattle, I can understand now and process a bit better what they did to us. They are properly legit. I am right where we need to be. I know exactly what our weaknesses are. Some of them are similar to last year. The deep ball is absolutely one of our biggest issues. Like I say, depth of target is bad. Throw behind the sticks is bad. Like I say, the deep shots or whatever, is it like 20, 30-yard air balls? Derek Goff's not high. I know what we are. I know what we aren't. But we are a physical team that wears you down. We do not need tempo. Like I say, we want to use every second of that clock before the ball is snapped. And we want to use a lot of 12 personnel, yep. A lot of multiple tight ends. And we just want to ground and pound. And then when the shots open up, you take them whether they get completed or not. So right now we're doing everything that we need to be. And this is the brand of football that we want to do. We're a running football team. And people don't seem to get that. This is the style. We will run between the tackles on early downs all year. And that's not going to change no matter who we're playing. Like I said, we're not just going to come out and start airing it out, even with the personnel we have or we don't. So that is our brand of football right now, is we want the ball for 40 minutes of the game, and we will march up and down the field, and we will go for it on multiple fourth downs. I think, is it like 52 fourth down attempts since like 2019 or something? Leads the league. Like, we are pretty much, I'm pretty sure we're first in that category, like, last 3.5 years. Pretty much sums up, really. We are the chancers. We are the gamblers. We roll the dice more than anyone, nearly.
And what are your overall thoughts on the season so far? Someone in the chat, probably for me, quite rightly mentioned that we're 6-2 through the hardest part of the schedule. How are you feeling about this team? And, I mean, is there anything overall that you want to see us improve on, or that you're really happy with that we've turned a corner from? Give us some high-level thoughts.
I'm incredibly content with 6-2. You know, I said at the start of the season that those first five were really tough for us in terms of where we were going, who we were playing. And, you know, if we came out of that 3-2, 4-1, I'd be a pretty contented chappy. And, you know, we came through those first five really good. We were 4-1. And I have been really impressed, not just with the way we've played, but with the way we've bounced back from our setbacks as well. I mean, it's a characteristic of this team now. Like, every time they've sort of been challenged, every time, you know, hammer's been dropped on them, they've got back up and they've stood up and they've recovered from it. I mean, the Seattle game was really galling at the start of the season, you know, and mainly because that was our fault, really. Turnovers, you know, boneheaded decisions, stuff like that. But they came back and tanked the Falcons the next week. And then after that, Baltimore, you know, just getting absolutely blown apart. And you know what? I'm with Ryan. I don't mind. I put it out on Twitter today. Every single team in the NFL this year has had a screw-up. Even the Eagles messed up big time against the Jets. There's a reason the term any given Sunday exists in the NFL. Because you know what? Sometimes, on a Sunday, the other team's just better than you and nothing goes right and it happens. And we've now seen it twice. We've seen it, especially in the Ravens case, with the Seattle team that went out at the deadline and started buying players like they were candy. Like, really good ones. They went all in on that team and they still got blown apart worse than we did. So the big part about it was, could we mentally recover from that? And yes, we did. We came out the next week against the Raiders, and that was potentially really tricky because they're one of those teams who can cause you issues. You're at home, there's a lot of pressure on you, and they once again answered every question, I think, they were asked. So you're sitting at 6-2, you're at the bye, you're about to get healthy. You know, this is, as Dan was saying in his press conference earlier, you want to go into December playing your best ball. December playing your best ball, that is the goal. The goal before that is to get there and be in contention. If you can get to December and be in contention and be ascending towards your best football, you are in a position to really make a run into the postseason. And, you know, I think we're on track so far. I agree with him that all three phases haven't played together as one yet, but the most important thing is all three phases have played well. We know they can all play well. We know this offense is still as good as the one last year. The defense, shockingly good, really. We know that can play great, and we know special teams can come in clutch when we need it to. It's just all about bringing it together, and, you know, it'll come. It'll come with time. This is still a very young team. Like, people have forgotten that, and we lost a lot of the vets we brought in. They've not even seen the field for us. Mosley, barely seen. CJ, barely seen. So there's still a lot of the young guys out there, and it's a growth process. So it's coming to the bye, 6-2, in a good vein of form, off a big win on Monday Night Football, under a lot of pressure. I'm really happy with where we're at, and that's not saying that there isn't improvement to be made. Of course there is, but overall, I love where we're at. I love where this team's at. I love how it's playing, and I love the direction we're trending in. And I'm glad that they didn't push the boat out on trades. I'm glad that Brad and Dan are still sticking to the process. Might be a long one, but when we get there, it'll be worth it.
Ash, your thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. It shocked me a bit, the expected win-loss, in a way, because aside from that Seattle game and the Baltimore game, I think we were pretty much on top for majority of the other games. Like Kansas City was a bit back and forth, but then headed into that sort of second half, we really put it down and limited the scoring. The rest of the time, we were just dominating. So unless they really value those lot of like those losses, and then the other ones add up to about like 1.1 losses, which kind of makes sense in a way.
So basically, the formula I think is adding 0.2 or 0.3 for all the other games, and then is adding a 0.8 of a loss when we were 6 points down to the Chiefs with 8 minutes to go in the game. I think they're marking that down as a majority of a loss.
That's it. An asterisk has got to null it down, hasn't it? Those asterisks are worth at least minus one. So,
but legitimately, we were actually behind in the game for a large portion of the game. We only led when Montgomery scored the final touchdown. We scored the first touchdown. Sorry, my bad. But we were behind for the majority of the game. That's the point.
Fair. But yeah, and then looking at some of those advanced stats, which I love that I'm slowly warping back to my twisted look at all the stats kind of point of view. I'm loving this new advanced stats. It's great. It's pointing a lot of how our offense works, which is perhaps... it's part of the reason maybe J-Mo isn't fully living up to his potential yet. It's because he's a big deep threat guy. So also go deep, get one-on-one coverage, test it kind of thing, and burn past them. He can probably get there in the NFL as a sort of more like, and I'm going to use Leaf as an example because he's been the elite separator in the NFL for the past three seasons because of his speed, but gets that kind of receiver where he can use his speed in the short to intermediate game, but where we actually target. Because for us, it is... throw it in safe, reliable on-target throws, and then the receivers get the yards after the catch. That's the reason we're so low on ADOT, 28th in versus the six throws on first downs, is because we are relying on Amon-Ra, Leaf, Gibbs, the past couple of games, getting the ball in space against a mismatch against a linebacker or safety and letting them go to work. Perhaps that's something that needs to change in the second half of the season where we... in the easier side of the schedule where we can maybe start experimenting a bit more with hitting throws deep, because there's going to be times in the playoffs or against Cowboys or potentially the Vikings where we might have to sort of go deep a bit more often. We might have to push the ball because they're taking away the underneath stuff. But for the most part, it's working. Third in time possession, we said, second in play action yards, last in RPO throws. If we start throwing a bit few more RPOs in there, challenging the linebackers even more. Because imagine a sort of, even a basic RPO where it's either Goff hands the ball off to Gibbs on an outside zone, or he hits Amon-Ra over on a quick slant over the middle. Easy stuff like that that we can easily incorporate into the offense over the next couple of weeks, set up for later in the season. And it could bear dividends in late December, early January, where we've in that crunch time against the Cowboys, and then last game against the Vikings, and then into the playoffs, where we're in the dance and it's time to nut up or shut up.
All right, let's turn our attention to the offense, lads, and I'll highlight some players in particular, give you some PFF grades, give you the efficiency stats, and then have a look at some formations. So Jared Goff has completed 200 passes out of 293 attempts. That's 68.3%. 2,174 yards, 12 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, passer rating of 96.4, QBR of 65, PFF grade of 88.3, which is third amongst quarterbacks. Excuse me, 11 big-time throws to 6 turnover-worthy plays is very good. He's limiting turnover-worthy plays massively. Adjusted completion percentage of 81.3 is the highest in the NFL. Not surprising then that the majority of his balls are on target. He's had 6 batted balls. He's had 15 sacks on 103 pressures, which means he's turning pressures into sacks at a rate of 14.6%, which I think is pretty good. Otherwise, there was something else I wanted to highlight in there, but I can't remember what it was.
Drops.
It was drops. So drops, he has had, where are we? He is second in drops into 17 drops in the NFL. If you take out the qualified 20% of the dropbacks available in the NFL so far this season, he's second only to Kirk Cousins. His drop percentage is 7.8. Kirk has 20 drops at... oh, my flag's gone. at 8.5%. So we have not helped Jared Goff this season by committing some bad drops, and the offense would look even better if we'd been backing him up in that respect. So I know that some fingers are going to be pointing at a player in particular. Maybe we'll get to that in a minute. Leading running back at the moment is Jahmyr Gibbs, 76 carries for 399 yards. That's 5.3 yards per carry and 2 touchdowns in the air. He's 28 of 33 for 165 and a PFF grade of 73.6. Ably backed up by David Montgomery. He's got 94 carries for 385 yards, which is 4.1 yards per carry and 6 touchdowns for him. He's 6 of 10 for 66 in the air. PFF grade of 69.6. The leading receiver is, of course, Amon-Ra St. Brown. 57 catches on the year on 78 targets, 665 yards. That's 11.7 yards per catch. 3 touchdowns for him as well. PFF grade of 83.6. But Sam Laporta's getting up there too. 43 catches for him so far this season on 59 throws his way. 434 yards for him. That's 10.1 yards per reception and 4 touchdowns for him. PFF grade of 72.7. Other good grades in there. Penei Sewell, 82.4. Craig Reynolds is the 5th highest ranked running back in the NFL at the moment at 80.1. Frank Ragnow, 77.5. Graham Glasgow, 77.1. Taylor Decker, 75.4. Khalif Raymond, 75.2. And Josh Reynolds, 74.1. So across the board, some really, really good grades. There's only a few bad ones to pick out at all. One's Colby Sawstall, which is super harsh, given that he had a really good game. He's only played 2 in the most recent, but he's got a grade of 47.8. Jameson Williams, 46. And Brock Wright, 41.8. In terms of efficiency, we are 40.7% on third down. That's 13th. We're 47% on fourth down. That's 17th. And we've scored touchdowns on 13 out of 27 trips. That's 21st in the NFL. So in all of those metrics, I would say there's room for improvement. And finally, just a bit on formations and EPA. The Lions are nil EPA on offense. Absolute zero. So they have not added any expected points versus average per play in the NFL, which is quite interesting given how highly rated this offense is. They do the majority of their work in 11 personnel, which you would expect, and they've passed 64% of the time out of 11 personnel. It's 61% of their plays from 11 personnel, and that creates an EPA per play of 0.01. 12 personnel, second with 25%, 21 is third with 5%, and 13 personnel also with 5%. So those are basically all the formations, 11, 12, 21, and 13. We basically don't run anything else at more than 1% of the time. More than 7 plays in any other formation doesn't happen. We run the ball 65% of the time in 13 personnel, which I guess isn't surprising. With 21 personnel, we only run it 53% of the time. So we're 2 running backs out there. We run it and pass it pretty evenly. And then out of 12 personnel, it's 50-50. So we're actually really quite balanced, apart from in 11 and 13 personnel, which I guess is not hugely surprising. We create the most EPA per play comfortably in 13 personnel with 0.21 expected points added per play. Guys, I've gone through a heck of a lot there, but we talked about Goff a little bit already. Gibbs going at 5.3 yards per click is just exceptional, right? I know he's had a few big runs recently, but he's really come on strong. Amon-Ra and Sam Laporta have really picked it up, and that offensive line is doing some great work.
Yeah. I think I saw yesterday that I think it's Dalton Kincaid and Sam Laporta are both on par to break the rookie receiving record for a tight end. They're both on par to be 81 receptions on the season. Speaks for itself, really. He's currently the best tight end of the rookie crop, and there were 2 taken before him. So he's looking like an absolute steal. Some of them stats are alarming, like I said. The drops, it's unacceptable, that many drops. It's killed us so many times. And I'm not going to come out here and say most of them balls are perfect, because a lot of the balls, I remember, were terrible. They were wobblers, they were behind, but they were catchable, a lot of them. And yeah, the receiver will take the blame, I'm going to say, on 60% of them I'll put four. I'll put some of the block get glam on block because, like I say, some of it wasn't good. But yeah, and red zone, we would have won a lot of our games a lot more comfortably if we weren't settling for field goals and being on third and long and having to convert fourth downs in a red zone. That, like I say, against Las Vegas, for example, lots of times we got in the red zone, it fell apart when we got to like within like the 15, 10-yard line, whether it was blown plays, bad play calls, poor execution. We should have won that game by a landslide or the one by 12. So red zone players haven't cost us any of the games, I don't think. I feel like we still lost both games, which is fair enough, but we'd have been out of sight in a lot more of the wins. We'd have made life a lot more easier for ourselves. But yeah, I've got no complaints about Goff. He's, despite some untimely turnovers, he's cleaned that up. Amon Ra just doing what he always does. The rest of the guys between him are playing a good combined second fiddle. Sam's doing well. The starting offensive line all got like plus 74 grades. That's bang on where it needs to be. That's fine by me. We've now got probably the most competent rookie and senior running back combo in the league, probably. I'd say they're probably the best duo, probably. If you look at passing and rushing, if you look at receiving rush, I think they're maybe the best rookie and senior combo. Like, how they split the carries now will be very interesting. I think that's going to be certainly something to watch. I feel like Montgomery obviously got a good contract. I feel like he's gonna get his workload back. But by the end of the year, I expect Jahmyr Gibbs to be the guy because he was taken 12 overall. He is the guy. He's the future. And eventually, Dave Montgomery will become second fiddle. And I feel like that just will be natural progression. But I'd expect them both against the Chargers to get 15 carries each. I'd even give him 50-50. I'd fully split. If David Montgomery isn't 100%, I don't even play him. I would not even suit him up unless he can tell me he is fully fit, because now I feel confident enough that I can give Jimmy a 22 touches and it won't break him because he's come a long way in the last 7 weeks. So offensively, I am very content with that. I like 70% of the stuff I've seen. Don't like 20%. Absolutely hate 10%, but it can all be worked on. Right now, I don't want to be that guy, but I will be that guy. Jameson Williams right now does not fit this offense. We have just not found a way to incorporate him, and that's coaching. He needs special teams touches. He needs jet sweeps. He needs tosses. You cannot just give him two deep balls every game. And if he drops one of them, then be like, oh, well, we'll try again next week. It'll all come together eventually. That's not going to slide long term. You've got to find a way to incorporate him shallow and intermediately. And if you're not going to do that, well, at the end of the season, I'm going to be saying, well, I want some return on that value. If that means shipping him out, well, then we'll have a conversation at the end of the year. But right now, I don't think they're putting the kid in the best chances to return on that trade. So I think we're letting him down. The drop, some of them have been costly. Could he have caught them? Yes. But he's just not getting the workload. And they're not going to sacrifice winning games over getting him touches. I do get that. Right now, we're winning games and he does get the odd target. It could potentially make splash plays. They're not going to sacrifice that. But we do have to find a way to strike a balance. And that's the biggest thing issue I have right now with the offense is striking a balance with our premium real estate. That's Jahmyr Gibbs and that's Jameson Williams. Like I say, those two are the home run guys. So, yeah, I think it'll click by the end of the season. We'll find a way to get them both with the ball in the hands where it matters the most. But right now, I don't see any reason to change anything.
I was going to say, for me, obviously you can probably hear me clicking. We just need to look back at the division a couple of years to find the perfect way to use Monty and Gibbs. Just look at the 2021 Packers. AJ Dillon, 187 carries for 803 yards, 5 touchdowns. Aaron Jones, 171 carries for 799 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's pretty much the perfect way to use them. Monty in the sort of AJ Dillon power gap role, but can still do the zone. And then Jones, being Gibbs, outside zone, get the ball in his hands, but can still do some work behind between the tackles. Perfect split. Best way to do it. Just look at how they did it and replicate over here with arguably better weapons to diversify from as well, because back then they had Adams, but that's it. Like, Lazard wasn't really scaring you on the outside. Equanimeous wasn't scaring you on the outside. Randall Cobb and Amari Rodgers were doing a call in the slot. So we'll be able to easily get Monty and Gibbs space against the for the run. Like, I saw it earlier this week that Craig Reynolds against the Raiders was running against the most stacked boxes in the NFL. And he was producing. Imagine what it could be like with both of them back healthy, the offensive line a bit healthier, and then receivers a bit healthier as well. We can absolutely tear people apart on offense. But there are problems. Like, and people know that if they watched me and Matt watching the Raiders game, the amount of times I was face-palming at some of the plays in the red zone. Like, as much as I love the idea, potentially, of Amara, the Amara play, it wasn't clearly designed for him. And as soon as that pressure came, he should have thrown the ball away, but he ate the sack because he panicked. We're getting a bit too cutesy in the red zone. We need to sort of go back to basics. But I guess I think it's just Johnson trying to get away from the plays he would have if he had his best red zone weapon, because Monty would be that. That's the reason 13 personnel is our highest EPA play. It's because it's goal line. That's our goal line package. You're getting touchdowns in it. So, like, and that's the Monty sort of formation. So with him back, we'll be able to run that a bit more on fourth and ones. Fourth ones, fourth and twos, we'll be able to use that. We'll be able to convert a few more fourth downs. It's just a simple fact of, again, just going back to basics, doing what Aaron Glenn had to do after the set of the Seahawks game. Instead of trying to get all cutesy because you're in a situation, you're trying to win the game all by yourself, just go back to basics, do what you do well, and build up from there instead of trying to suddenly force trick plays out of nowhere just because you're worrying about the red zone efficiency, because it's just going to make things worse.
And what do you make of this Lions offense, generally speaking? I mean, it has been good in parts, especially between the 20s. I think Ash is right, though. The red zone offense has kind of been lacking a bit, and I think the stats kind of bear that out. What have you liked so far? What do they maybe need to improve on a bit?
I just feel like we've not seen the full Monty with the offense this year yet. We've not seen it at its best. You know, we've been short of it. And I think part of that is due to injuries. You know, we've lost Monty the last few games, and our offensive game is predicated a lot around him. The power runs, the heavy yardage, you know, short yardage situations. A lot of that is based around him, and without him, that makes it difficult to play the way you want to. Obviously, missing all three guys on the interior at some point as well has not helped, because, again, power run game through the middle, if you've not got your interior guys in, your starters in, it also makes it difficult. So I think it's partly down to that, and partly, as has already been said, I think they've been way too adventurous with some of these calls. Sometimes the best offenses are the most simple offenses. And there's been so many attempts at trick plays, which have been by getting too cutesy, these issues. And it's just, it's really killed drives. And at no point, apart from outside of a little section in the Carolina game where we start putting points down, we've not really dropped the hammer on somebody. Like, score after score after score after score after score. You know, like last year, we racked up points. I mean, in fairness, opposition teams were keeping up with us quite quick. But you just don't feel like it's reached top gear yet. And it's a little bit on injuries. It's a little bit on coaching. Obviously, we are putting up some decent points. We're getting good performances out there individually. But I think schematically, I think we struggle to have a plan B. I think we got a really good plan A when Monty and the offensive line are healthy. I question whether we've got a good plan B when we don't, because it does seem like we are struggling a little bit and we are having to rely on good defensive stops to give us good field position or good special teams plays to help us out. And so I don't want to use the term underwhelmed with the offense. I just don't think we haven't seen it at its best yet. And hopefully now with everyone healthy, like Dan said, you've got to play complementary football. Well, individually, Laporte has been great. Amon-Ra's just like a super stud at this point. Penne's been great. Goff has been really good. But we need to see it sort of all come together into more complete offensive performances from the team. So there's a lot to work on. From both the coaches and from the personnel point of view. But we're getting healthy now, so I'm hoping with the health right, the coaches get it right, we're going to see a lot more points being scored. Like, we're going to the Chargers. Chargers are the Chargers, but they can put 40 down on you on any given day. So you want to go there, and you want your offense to be figuring itself out and getting there, because those are the kind of games you're going to need it. Defense ain't going to be able to step up every single game for us, as we've seen with the Ravens. So yeah, I enjoy individually a lot of what I've seen, but I remain patiently waiting for the main show. I'm yet to be fully delighted by it.
Right, let's take our attention to the defense, and statistical leaders on defense were led in tackles by Alex Anzalone. 4 passes defended, 3 sacks, 57 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 6 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade 72.6. Led in sacks by Aiden Hutchinson, but only just. He's got an interception, 4 passes defended, and a forced fumble with 2 fumble recoveries. 4.5 sacks, 23 tackles, 4 tackles for a loss, 10 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 90 flat. Best cornerback so far statistically in terms of interceptions is Jerry Jacobs. He's got 3 alongside 5 passes defended. 33 tackles, a tackle for a loss, a quarterback hit, and a PFF grade of 65.7. Other good grades in there. The leading man in the clubhouse is Aleem McNeil. He's got a grade of 84.6, and he's got 4 sacks, which is only half a sack behind Aiden Hutchinson. Otherwise, there is also Brian Branch, who's got a 77.5. Ifeatu Melifonwu, 75.8. Romeo Okwara, 71.5. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, 70.7. Isaiah Bugs, 69.3. And Tracy Walker, 66.2. Some of the worst grades in there is Will Harris with a 47 flat. Jack Campbell, 46.3. And Benito Jones with a 43.8. In terms of efficiency, Lions only give up 32.6% of third downs. That is third in the NFL. On fourth down, 45.5% is 13th. But in the red zone, they give up 17 touchdowns on 26 trips. That's 27th in the NFL. Looking at the formations, they play in base, and I'm defining base to be 4-3 or 5-2. They play in those formations 25% of the time, 20% in 4-3 with 3 linebackers, and 5% of the time in 5-2. Which would otherwise be called 3-4. They play in sub the rest of the time, led by 4-2-5 with 5 DBs. That's 48% of the snaps in 4-2-5. The other nickel formation, 3-3-5, they're in 20% of the time. And then into the more of the funky formations, much less. So 2-4-5, 4% of the time, and everything else is 1% or less. 5-1-5, 3-4-4, 6-3-2, 6-4-1, goal line packages, and, you know, desperation packages on fourth down from midfield facing Hail Mary and stuff like that. In terms of EPA, they are especially effective in 4-2-5 with 0.19 expected points added per play in nickel formation. Also adding 0.8 in 3-3-5, the other nickel formation, but 2-4-5, they've played 18 snaps, but they've added 0.76 points per play in that formation. They're not especially great in base. 4-3, they're giving up 0.14, and 5-2, they're giving up 0.36. It won't surprise you to know that when they're in base coverage, they're facing run and pass 50% of the time each, but when they're in their nickel packages, it's 70, 91, and 94% pass rate. So that is kind of in line with what you'd expect with matching up formations and tendencies for the other teams. That's the defense, boys. And I mean, I don't know whether it's surprising that overall the EPA per play is higher on defense than it is on offense. The defense is contributing points to this team, and the offense just isn't in terms of that metric, which is just weird. But there are some peripheral guys out there with some really good grades. Malifonwu, Aquara. It's hard to call Bugs peripheral, but he's been a healthy scratch for two games, so I guess he kind of is in reality. But Branch has hit the ground running. Aleem, 84.6 grade. Hutchinson, 90. I mean, Jerry's going to play, and Anzalone's turned a corner. This defense has faced the strongest part of the schedule, and it's come out, bar two games, smelling of roses. And I think there's still room for improvement as well there, boys. And I'm going to come back to you first to have the say first here. The defense, great on third down, poor in the red zone, but I mean, what a stark contrast from last season.
Yeah, I don't really care too much about the stats for these guys. What I see on the field is night and day beyond last year. I wasn't expecting such an improvement so quickly, I'm not going to lie. I was kind of happy with a middle-of-the-road defense this year. Well, approaching middle of the road, that's what I wanted. And, you know, especially for the early parts, but through most consistently, we've got higher than that. And it's just been great in all facets. So, you know, I was talking about the offense, the coaching's been iffy, and, you know, the players just been a little bit iffy. But then you look at the defense and it's kind of the alter opposite. You know, the coaching has been great for the most part. I've really enjoyed what they've been dialing up, how they've been preparing for teams outside of the Ravens. That was a faux pas, but they're not alone on that. And again, it happens. But for the other eight games, I think they've been really prepared for what they've been doing. The coaches have been great. Obviously, the work they've been doing with the players has been tremendous, because I think technically they've been great. I think they've been very disciplined. They've been everything they've not been these last few years. It just feels like something in the building's a little bit different. You know, the positional coaching changes have worked. You know, especially the guys on the D-line and in the secondary with Bly and John Scott just look so much better. And the players themselves have been playing out of their minds, really. I mean, you think of the attitude and effort they've put in. Aleem has dropped weight and it shows. He's backed up that weight loss with, you know, his performances on the field. And Anzalone has really stepped up as the leader we wanted and expected him to be, you know, in year three. He's just looked so great this year. And then the young guys have all tapped in and are looking great as well, you know, especially in the secondary. Kirby's carrying on where he left off. Jerry, after a couple of bad games, just has turned around and just absolutely been playing lights out. He's been playing great. And the vets have been coming to the show as well. Cam Sutton's just, we've not really spoke about him. And that's like the biggest compliment you can give him, because he's back there doing his job and not making mistakes, which is just what we've not had from our veterans on defense for so long now. And to be honest, they've kept us in games. So many clutch stops, you know, keeping teams down to so few points when our offense has been spluttering a bit ourselves. You know, I've just been really impressed by what I've seen from them. And yes, there are issues. The finishing on the pass rush is concerning. It's not good enough. You can't lead the league in pressures and then not even be top 10 in sacks and that. But that'll come from where we were. These issues that we've got now are minute. This time last year, we were talking about an all-time bad defense in terms of yards it's given up and just about everything. For the only issues to be not having enough sacks because of how many pressures you're making, I'm quite happy with that. So, again, they're trending incredibly high in the right direction for me. And they've had injuries to deal with. And we're getting the back now. Pascal's now getting back to full health. You know, we should hopefully have Houston back soon, who's going to help with some of that finishing production on there. So, you know, again, we've just reacted really well. You lose CJ, you lose Mosley, you think, oh God, we're in bother now. But they're not. They've just gone out there, they've done their work, and they've been very admirable. So I don't have a bad word to say about the defense this year. At the halfway point of the season, I don't think any of us thought they'd be this high and doing this well. So well played to them, and hopefully that carries on during the season.
Ash?
Yeah, so one go sort of bit more macro scale. One of the things I've seen us do a lot more is cover one. So last couple of years, we've been playing sort of New Orleans split safety shells where it's cover two, cover four, both safety sort of playing three and box, depending on the situation, doing a bit of everything. This season, it's been a lot more single high with Kirby or CJGJ, with Walker, CJGJ, all these players sort of more in the box against the run. And it's worked. So I know in the YouTube chat that Kneecap Biting with the Motor City Lions said the same. Just look at the pick that Kirby had against Jimmy G. Single high, Jimmy G sees the sort of double move and doesn't see Kirby, and Kirby's easy just to go step back. That's my right off. That's my pick. And then foolishly took out the end zone when he should have just knelt down for the touchback. But can't be perfect. He's still a second year player. He'll learn. It's just excitement. But yeah, just the little schematic changes we've made over the past 2 years just to put the best in our players. So obviously going from first year to second year, changing from an odd front to even halfway through last season, changing Hutcher over from the big end to the rush end so you can use his stand up a bit more where he's better. This season, changing the coverage on the back end, going from a lot of man heavy cover two, cover four, as I said, to more zone concepts and cover one, cover three that puts our players in better positions. It's just a constant evolution and it's bearing fruit. So he said, Branch is a top 10 corner by PFF right now, yet he's kind of going under radar for people. Because I know, obviously, Dev Witherspoon's doing things in Seattle. Jalen Carter's been pretty damn good for that's the Eagles for defensive line. But Branch, because he's missed a couple of games, and Lions haven't really been up there since the Ravens game. But he's going under the radar. If it comes out by the end of the year that he's still that top 10, perhaps gets another pick, a couple of forced fumbles, and we make the playoffs, we can attribute him being drafted as like the sort of final and the signing of Cam Sutton as those final pieces in the secondary. We suddenly went from having Jeff Okuda, Manny Aurier, Mike Hughes, Will Harris, I'll add, to playing them and them kind of having good games. Like obviously everyone, so Okuda last year against the Cowboys is probably his best game he's going to play in the pros. He was absolutely great at that, but they weren't consistent. Sutton is consistent. Even when he has bad games, it's not really noticeable. Branch, just elite. Jerry's really steps up the plate from being someone I thought, oh yeah, that's a cornerback three. When Moses fit, he'll probably take his place and Jerry's a good first man off the bench. He's an easy cornerback two in this league now, no doubt about it. And the other piece is a Campbell, okay, yeah, low PFF grade. But number one, linebacker's hard to transition to. Number two, we've been putting him here, there and everywhere. One week he's at off ball. The next week we're lining him up as a Sam linebacker with his hands in the dirt pass rushing. It's going to be hard for him to transition until we can finally get him locked in that off-ball role. Yeah, it's going to be bad and everyone's going to be like, this is why you don't take a linebacker in the first round instead of actually looking at things. I'm really happy with this defense and hopefully it can continue. We could just get a few more pieces back healthy and just keep going.
Ryan, do you think that that's the difference here? You know, that we've kind of changed the schematics of things. We've kind of gone a bit more zone heavy, as Ash has been talking about, and that's brought about the uptick in fortunes? Or do you think there's a bit more to it? Do you think there's luck involved? Give us your thoughts on this defense.
Oh. Ryan, you're muted.
Ryan, there you go.
Oh, you can never turn that a bit of luck, but I think a lot of things are look better. Like I said, third down, that for as long as I can remember has been our kryptonite. We'd get a tackle for loss on second down. We'd get them at like third and 13. We'd think, oh, it's fine. We'll give up 7 yards. We'll force a punt. Nope, they complete for 22 yards and they match down the field and score. That was pretty much how the last 2 or 3 years went. Not this year. Like, that's a mixture of, like, say, player calling, players, coverage. Like, we are literally forcing punts. Like, say, we are actually getting off the field on the money downs, and that is something that we've just not been able to do in the past. And, like, say, some of the additions, like, say, Cam Sutton gives up receptions, but he don't give up first downs. Like I said, he can give up all the catches he wants, but if he keeps the ball being like 10 yards in front of him, don't find by me. He's not flashy. He's not luxurious. You don't hear his name called often. Not going to get you many turnovers, but that's fine because that's not kind of the player he is. Like you say, he's the kind of guy that will just take you away. He'll nullify you. He'll give you layups, and then that's it. He'll stop you there and then. And then the other side, like you say, Jerry, the kind of the boom or bust guy, the guy, like you say, that will get turnovers, will make turnover changing plays, will also have some bad days, give some penalties. But he's got the ability to make up for those bad players with the bigger, more explosive ones, get the takeaways. So I think they complement each other very well. Derek Barnes, I'd say he's kind of like emerged this year. Like I say, it was kind of treading water for 2 years, and you kind of think, was it a mistake? Was he taken too high? Was it wrong to go up and get him? But this year looks a totally different animal. I'd say he has properly come into his own. He's grading really well. Alex Anzalone, the guy is playing like lights out right now. Gets absolutely no respect when people rank like the middle linebackers. No one puts him in a top 10. And I just think that's really disrespectful. Because when you look at his level of play against the contract he was rewarded, which was good but not great, he's one of the best value for money defenders in the league. I say the rookies, mixed bag. Jack Campbell's playing a very difficult position. There's been lots and lots of teething issues, finding out where he fits. It's going to take a while. It's a pretty hard position to play. That's why a lot of people say don't take linebacker in the first round, because it's a very difficult transition to make. So right now, we don't really need him on the field that often because, like I say, we've got those veterans, which is fine. But yeah, Brian Branch, I say he's making plays. He's making his force felt, especially in the run game, sniffing out the screens, the reverses. He's showing his physicality. The D-line is funny because if I break down to it to individuals, I say a lot of them are not pulling their weight. I say the acquirers, Harris and that, not pulling their weight. I say Hutchinson is kind of, like I say, especially when it comes to finishing, he's on an island. Like I say, if you don't finish the play, no one else is going to. Like I say, as a collective generating pressure and forcing tipped passes, dodgy incomplete passes, that's they're coming together in that sense, and they're making quarterbacks' lives really difficult. Ali McNeil having a total breakout year for him. Like I say, he only had 4.5 sacks in his first 2.5 years. 4 sacks here on the ready. He's going to probably get, he's got to get a Pro Bowl nod, if not a first team, you might say maybe a second team All-Pro. That's very doable this year for him. He is really starting to turn some heads. So I'm happy with the defense than I am with the offense. If I have to say that, which because the defense had a lot bigger jump to make than they did last year. The offense has maybe taken a step back a little bit, but it was like top 5. The defense was just all at sea. But this year, it's standing up. It's making itself counted. And the only thing it needs to do is just force more field goals. Like I say, 78% touchdowns, it's quite high. But so far, it's keeping scoring down to a minimum. It's giving the offense very little to do. It's only asking it to score 20, 25 points a week, which for me, I can take that. That's fine by me. But yeah, I'd say it's been the more impressive side of the ball through 8 games. I'm very happy with some of them individually.
I want to weigh in a little bit here. I haven't really done apart from the statistical stuff, but defense obviously has been a massive shift. But I have reservations a little bit. The red zone stuff that Ryan just mentioned is something that really concerns me, because it's the sort of thing where I'm going to tell you that the reason why those statistics are bad is because against Carolina and Green Bay, we didn't much care. But against Seattle and Kansas City, we got carved up against efficient quarterbacking play. You know, Kansas did not have a great game that day. But when they get down there, they score. When Seattle get down there, they score. And the rest of the schedule, I'm spoiling a little bit, is 30th in the NFL. It's a super bloody easy run-in. we are not going to face an offense that is going to trouble us like some of these offenses could trouble us. And then we're going to hit the playoffs. And when these teams actually just get down to the red zone with regularity, we're going to have to wake the fuck up. Otherwise, we'll be one and done in the playoffs. When we come up against Dallas in the playoffs, it's going to be rough. But it's going to be hard because Dak's going to go in there and he's the sort of quarterback we struggle against, even if he's not that good. Like, he's lowest in turnover worthy play rate in the NFL or something. It's just like, ugh. So, got to tighten up on that. And one of the things I think is that we were a bend-don't-break offense before this regime got here. And you know what? Between the 20s, we were pretty horrific. But then we tightened up. And actually, we weren't too bad in the red zone. When Ryan mentioned we were awful on third down. Yeah, okay. But then when it got to the 20s, it was tough. And the reason why I think it was like that is because we were man-heavy, which kind of worked better in condensed fields, but doesn't work so well in the open field. We've gone zone-heavy, but we haven't adjusted when it gets down to a condensed area of the field. I'd like to see us go and completely transition as it gets closer and closer and closer to the red zone, because you've got to do something to change what's going on right now. And it's the sort of thing which is going to rule you out of going deep in the playoffs, is that specific stat, because the good teams will get to the red zone, and how you play that really is going to define your season. So let's see what happens with that. Other little stuff is just like true number one wide receivers making double moves, making some of our cornerbacks look a bit iffy, and that's going to happen, but it still has been glaringly horrible to watch a few times this year, and I'm just kind of worried about the CD Lambs of this world going up against Cam Sutton, because I don't like that matchup for us particularly. He's on an absolute tear this season. There's other guys as well that I'm just a bit worried about. And all of this is only to urge caution on what has been a transformative defense. They are one of the best in the NFL right now, bar none. They've been absolutely spectacular. And there's room for improvement. If you have a look at players like Josh Pascal, we haven't seen his best so far this season. He's been injured for the majority of it, but he's back healthy. Show us something. Because if he does, that's going to be absolutely massive for us. Kaminsky had a really good start to the season, has kind of gone off the boil in the last few games. If we can get him back on form, that's going to be really big for us. And then if one of Jones, Onzarike, and Bugs and Martin, if just one of them can decide that they're going to go on a bit of a tear alongside McNeil, then that's four down linemen who are going to give any offense a bit of trouble. And you put that alongside Anzalone and Barnes, and if Campbell decides he's going to come on strong down the stretch, the learning curve is big, but he might get there. This could be one of the best defenses, period, for the whole season. We have a look at how good the Ravens are, sure, and the Eagles and whatever, but I think we can hang, and all we need to do is just go up a little bit from where we are. So schematic play, adjustments in different areas of the field, just stuff to work on for me. But I'm super impressed with what we've done. I think Ant hit the nail on the head talking about coaching staff changes and what it's meant to us, along with the schematic changes that Ash was talking about. All right, I'm not going to bore you with special teams. Sorry, Eric. But there we go. I'm going to move on to some mid-season awards. And I don't think we're going to think about this too hard, boys, but let's just throw out a name or two here or there for each of these, and I'll just kind of go around and then come back each time. So, Ash, give us the MVP of the team so far.
Goff. Simple.
Ryan?
Montgomery.
Ant?
Dan Campbell.
Fair. I'm going to go with Goff as well. It's hard to be the fourth or third rated quarterback in the NFL for the Detroit Lions and not get that award for me. Offensive player of the year, non-quarterback, and
oh, it's Sewell. Landslide.
Ryan?
Taylor Decker.
Ooh, pull that left field. Oh. Ash?
Sewell.
Do I go for breakout candidate or not? I'm going to go Sam LaPorta.
Fair.
I think that if you're second in yards on this team and you're taking the weight off Amon-Ra's shoulder so he doesn't have to go and get 150 yards a game, it's only 100 yards a game. You deserve a bit of a nod. Defensive player of the year, Ash?
Hutchinson.
Ryan?
Anzalone.
Ant?
Yeah, Hercules.
I'm with the Warrior as well. Anzalone's been heroic. Breakout player of the year, Ant.
Aleem.
Ryan.
Jerry.
Ash.
Anzalone.
I'm going to go Derek Barnes. I think his shift has just been massive. Rookie of the year, Ash.
Branch.
Ryan.
Laporta.
Ant.
Branch.
I know I picked Laporta for offensive player of the year, but I'll go Gibbs just because of what he did. Because of what he did in relief, like, we could not have won those games without him, because without the run game, well, we could have done. We did it against Tampa, but, like, it would have been really tough. I think it's really silly that we've gone for four different Rookie of the Year players. That's ridiculous. Comeback player of the year. Where did I finish last time?
What do you define comeback?
Comeback player of the year.
Last year?
Whatever you want it to be. I guess it's not that different from breakout, I guess, really, is it? But maybe had some adversity last year or whatever. Whatever you want. Ash, what do you think?
Josh Reynolds. Dude, people thought he was going to be gone at the end of camp, and he's been pretty damn good. Like, especially through those like first five, six games of the season where every single pass he caught went for first down or touchdown. That dude has been a consistent wide receiver for us.
Ryan?
Oh, easy. It's Tracy Walker.
Ant?
Yeah, Tracy.
Yeah, I'm with Tracy as well. I mean, sit out entire of last year, then not even be a starter coming in, and Chauncey goes down. What an impact he's had on this team. Is coach of the year even a question here, Ant?
Don't know. I think there's a lot of people who could be. It's Glenn. With all the pressure on his shoulders this year, definitely on a hot seat. The job he's done is tremendous. So for me, that's very easy. It's Glenn.
Ryan?
Who was the safeties coach that was promoted to DB's coach?
Brian Duker.
Brian Duker.
Ash?
Hank. Like, he's made our seeker a decent starter. We've had all those injuries again, and we've still been able to run and protect Goff. So for me, it's Hank.
Yeah, I'm going to go Aaron Glenn as well. Biggest shift in the team, biggest impact. Right, there are some mid-season awards, but of course we'll do our end-of-the-season award show sometime in mid-February, maybe. So do check us out for that as we get suited and booted for the big day. That'll be our fourth? Third? I can't count. Fourth award show? It's going to be good. Can't wait. Right. Second half of the season projections, guys. So I'm going to run down the games that we got coming up. Maybe some brief thoughts on each one, expectations. And then we're going to talk about specific players. So people maybe that have or haven't been performing and what you think might change with them. Anything just kind of comes to mind with you. The notes that we have for this one from someone was just saying whether they're rookie, depth, injury, who's fighting for their place and needs to have a big second half of the year, anything that you want it to be, basically. But we're going to start at the Chargers this coming Sunday, and I'm going to skip over that because Thursday we're going to have our preview show. So moving down after at Chargers is versus Chicago Bears. Guys, and thoughts on the Bears so far this season and, you know, what we should be expecting from that very briefly.
An absolutely dominant landslide win in which we pile drive them so far into the ground that no one will be able to find them for a week. That is what I expect from that game. They are a poor-ass team. You know, they have had an easy schedule in which they have struggled. Their quarterback, well, it doesn't matter which they've got, turns it over God knows how many times. Their turnover machines, the running game is not going, the offensive line's awful. That is where, if the offense is going to come to life and start laying some pastings down on somebody, that's where I expect it to. I think they're a really poor team, and they're going to be at the basement, and they're going to be fighting for the number one pick this year. I don't want to see any hint of them winning that game.
So a nail-biting victory, Fran. Ryan?
They're ravaged of injuries. That will be Justin Fields' first game back, because I'm pretty sure he's not playing on Sunday. It'll be Badgent again. So I reckon Justin Fields' first game back, which is... that's not good for him, let's put it that way. Our offensive line is back. We're healthy. They're not. I want it to be a bloodbath. I want to go out there and I want to see Justin Fields' lifeless corpse head on a spike at end of full time when we beat them by 21 points plus. First ass whooping of the season is going to be opened.
Ash?
I'll get their one highlight player to tweet about for the next couple of weeks. But yeah, I'm expecting just them to come in to get torn apart in the Lions' den.
Yeah, we need to make a statement. And, you know, if that game runs close, it's going to give our opponents for the division hope. Like, if we can't turn them over significantly, the Vikings are going to look at it. Somehow they are still in this fight. I can't even believe that they are at this point, but we face them twice still. Like, if we get down to week 16, Minnesota are in it. It's in their hands, which is scary. We need to be done by week 15. So it starts with the Chargers, but after that with this game, and we need to win by at least three scores. That's where I'm at. Ash, going to come back down with you. Versus Green Bay is next up.
Throwbacks. Throwback week, baby. Absolutely beautiful uniforms for us to watch on Thanksgiving TV. Going to watch an absolutely great victory, have a nice roast dinner, then turn on the rest of their games and relax for a bit, because past couple of years, Thanksgiving hasn't been pretty for us. This year, it's going to be different. It's going to be a nice, relaxing, warm Thursday night.
Ryan?
I don't know. They'll make life difficult for us. We will win. But I've seen some individual things, like I said, that they're still plucky. Like I said, it's the one game of the season they'll probably circle on the calendar that they'll always be up for. Like I say, also, it's going to be Thanksgiving, isn't it? So there's always that added little extra spice to it. I think that's going to be a good game. I think they'll give us a good go, but I think we'll eke out the win. And then they'll enjoy some nice turkey.
And
you know, usually I'm pretty respectful of the Packers, but after what we did to them at Lambeau and seeing how much Love is struggling. I mean, he's coming to Ford Field. It's going to be raucous. He's not going to be able to hear himself think. He's going to have a headache for days after this. I think we'll take them to bits. You know, we've done it at their ground again. I'm expecting another dominant win at home. I want all three home games to be dominant wins in the NFC this year, because I think they're all bad teams who we need to paste at home. So I'm expecting another drubbing here. I just don't think he's up to it, and I don't think their run game is going to carry them enough to really threaten us.
I'm absolutely 100% with Ant. We need to paste them. They are so bad. They were utterly dominated yesterday by an awful Rams team. The Rams defense is genuinely good. Arkell Witherspoon and Aaron Donald just putting on a clinic. But they managed to do just enough to beat Brett Rippin-led offense. Like, they were awful yesterday. Like, really bad. I was legitimately watching them going, I think the Bears are better. I do think the Bears are better. So that tells you everything you need to know, given what we just said about Bears. Lions by 20. and come back down the line with you at the Saints. You have some strong takes about the Saints.
And I'd like to think I've been proven right about them. I think they're completely and utterly fraudulent this year. They struggled big time against the Bears yesterday in the Dome. You know, it's this intimidating place where the noise is so loud and they're always a good team. No, Chicago would have won that game if it wasn't for the turnovers and, you know, facing a Division II rookie quarterback. They looked poor. The defense looked poor. The offense doesn't look like it normally is. We have absolutely nothing to be scared about by going to the Dome. Not like previous years. This is a bad team, a fraudulent team in a poor division. That said, this is one of the banana skins where you can trip up, because Carr is a good quarterback and Camara can put 150 down on you if you're not at the races. But again, I think this is the kind of... We need a statement road win. You know, I know we've had the Chiefs and the Packers, but we need another one. And I think this will be... I think we'll win. I think it will be narrow. But after what they did against the Bears, I have no respect for them whatsoever. They're a bad team.
Ryan?
I agree, yeah. That's you can't go in there and look past them. Like, say, Carr, serviceable, good. But then I look around him, supporting cast, and I'm just not enamoured. Like, Taysom Hill, the guy's a fucking joke. I don't like him. Never have. He's a phony. Shit quarterback, crap 10 tight end. The guy's basically a cheerleader. Like I say, he was making plays yesterday. I won't tolerate that bullshit they want to pull with him. Alvin Kamara, I think he's washed. I think he's well overrated. So offensively, nah, I don't think they got that much to hurt us. Defensively, yeah, they got some guys, but nah, they don't have the guys to compete with us. Like I say, we're on a roll by now. I think we're going there, and yeah, we handle business, and we win it fairly comfortably.
Ash?
Nothing to worry about. Teams that I support going to the Caesar Superdome the past 2 years, I've had some good times. So people that are going, get your reservations ready at Bourbon Street, because it's going to time to get drunk celebrating another Detroit Lions win.
Yeah, I'm with you. Saints are pish, frankly. I won't overlook them. Ant and Ryan are right. If you do, they'll hit you in the face. But just don't overlook them then. And there shouldn't be anything to write home about. At Chicago, we've talked about them ad nauseum. Versus Denver, Ash.
Really depends which Denver team turns up. Is it the team that played Miami? Or is it the team that played the Chiefs last week? Because if it's the one that played the Chiefs, this could be a banana skin. Because... okay, yeah, Russ hasn't been as good as he was in Seattle, but when he's in the groove, he can still do things. Cortland Sutton's one of, if not the best, red zone wide receiver in the league this year. Javonte Williams is coming back to form after tearing his ACL last year. So they have some pieces on that offense. And then the defense rebuilding, but they've still got some pieces there. So this could be the major banana skin, but at the same time, which bet is one of those where, like, yeah, it could be a balance game, but we've got the talent differential now to win those kind of games where if we don't overlook it, if we come in with the right mindset, should be a walk in the park. But as I say, it is, we keep saying, it's just about not overlooking it, to come in with the right mindset.
Ryan, you've been one of the bigger Denver supporters, I think, this year. Not yeah. supporters, but backers.
I think Denver are just a weird dark horse. They just are really frustrating. The Denver, their D will slow us down. I think their D will frustrate us in the red zone, could hold us to field goals. But their O-line is like Swiss cheese. It is utter garbage. It hangs out every person to dry, and it is literally just five turnstiles. It's like Leeds train station, like when they forget to close all the gates. We are going to absolutely just have fun and tee off on Russell Wilson. And I cannot stand that fucking little douchebag. I want to literally smash his face in the floor. Like I said, I hate him. One of the biggest fannies in the league. We will win a low-scoring gritting, because we will annihilate them on offense, on their offensive line. Our D will stop them more than they stop us. But it will be difficult. I think it'll be one of the more difficult games in the second half.
And are you a fan of one of the biggest fannies in the NFL?
You know what? In all honesty, I think Denver's the toughest team left on our schedule. I do genuinely believe that. I think they have turned a corner. They're not that, you know, as much as I've like ragged on Peyton and that, I think they seem to have figured a system. They seem to have got Russ comfortable. The running game seems to be working better now. And when you've got that many playmakers on a team at receiver and tight end, it's like they make life very dangerous. And, you know, that defense has always been good. It's just had one of the league's worst offenses sort of counteracting it. So I would be concerned. We're going to drop games. I don't think we're going to go win. We're not going to go without another loss this season. I think this might be the one that bites us because we've had a few big games running up to this. We'll have three in the NFC North. We'll be coming off that. I could see us losing this one very narrowly because I think they are a good team and we will lose one eventually.
So I picked this game to lose in preseason, which is really annoying now because, I mean, they've gone from just one of the worst teams of all time in the first like five games of the year to giving up a total of, 9, 19 and 17 against the Chiefs twice and the Packers. So that's 28, 40, 45 points in three games against the Chiefs twice. Like, that's scary. Legitimately scary. And, I mean, Goff's going to be running for his life. And coverage-wise, that's the reason. But pass rush and coverage, that defense is so damn good. And Ash mentioned Courtland Sutton. You know, they've got enough weapons in there. He's thrown for 16 touchdowns this year. Goff's thrown for 12. Like, that's a very basic stat, but it tells you how they're doing their punishment on offense. It's just those deeper shots when they can, and it works. So, trouble, although I think we'll get through it. Minnesota twice in this stretch, boys. So, who am I coming to first this time? Ash, is it?
I can go again.
Oh, no, is it Ant? Sorry, no, whatever. Go.
I'll go. This is my... At Minnesota, I think, is the game we're most likely to drop. Because that team in that stadium, it can get, the atmosphere can get to you. I know Kirk's not there anymore, but look what Dobbs did yesterday without even having one rep with that O-line and wide receivers. If you can get some sort of system working where they're getting O'Connell's getting moving pockets for him where he's using his legs and then he can hit Addison, Jefferson when he comes back, Hawk, they can punish you. And that defense, okay, yeah, again, it's like sort of the Broncos where it's aging a bit. They might need to rebuild a tiny bit on there, but it can get you stops when they need to. So that, where that puts the atmosphere, I can see that game being the one we drop, but it means nothing. By then, we've got the division wrapped up. We can absorb that loss, gives us that little bit grit to come back. Then week 18, looking at that potential number one seed because the Philadelphia Eagles have got a pretty tough schedule to come. And we win and we get that first seed and we've got a lovely first round bye going into the playoffs.
Ryan?
Oh, I really hope we've won the division by now. If we haven't, then we have a little sweat on. The Vikings are so weird because right now, like at this point here, it's Dobbs or it's Nick Mullins that's come off IR. Or it's Jaren Hall, or it's Sean Mannion on the practice squad. Who the hell knows who's going to be a quarterback at this point? It really is a free-for-all. But, yeah, like, I think I can see us dropping this game. Like, say, Bynum, one of the best defensive backs in the league right now. Byron Murphy kind of getting better. He's slowly rolled in that role. They've done some additions. Hunter... Josh Metellus, guy's playing out of his skin right now. The defense has kind of come alive. Harrison Smith is still like he's a hit man. Their defense, it is legit. Like I say right now, their defense is really good. And Hockenson, like I say, he's playing really well right now. Like I say, he's helping out quarterbacks that are struggling. Justin Jefferson has probably got back to speed right now. This is going to be a really, really hard game. I think it could be a bit of a shootout, to be honest. Like I said, the run game, I've really not been enamoured of Alexander Mattison at all. I think he's really struggling right now to have that lead back. But passing the ball, Addison looks good. Yeah, I can see us. Hopefully we've won the division by now and we drop a close one in Minneapolis.
And...
I just, you know, the NFC North has given us so much grief for as long as I can remember now. The Vikings are a poor team. They are. They've got a quarterback who is okay. And you know what? What he's done is very admirable. But I want to go there to Minnesota and absolutely smash them. And I want to culturally appropriate a win off them like they culturally appropriate Icelandic heritage. Like they can't come up with any of their own stuff. The thunderclap, all that sort of shit. No, I want to go there and destroy the lot of them. And I think we can go there and beat them. I think by this point in the season, you are getting towards the playoffs. You have got a zip in your step. I don't think the Vikings are going to be playing for much by this point. I want to go out there and absolutely pummel them. These are the years where we're going to absolutely dominate this division. We did it last year with the worst team. I think we can do it again this year. And they don't have no Kirk this year. Kirk's always been the pain in the arse with us. They don't have that now. The Darisaw's hurt. I think we're going to kill them twice. I want 6-0 against this damn division. I know it doesn't always happen and any given Sunday and that, but all three teams in this division are bad, like very, very bad. And I want us to absolutely make good on that. I think we'll kill them twice.
I'm looking at the Vikings' schedule, and I think rolling into Cincinnati the week before they play us, they're going to run off the next four. That'll be 8 straight for them and 9 in their last 10. They could be 9-4 when they face the Lions. They face the Saints at home, Denver away, the Bears at home, and the Raiders away. If they can get over Denver away, they're going to be 9-4 when we're 10-3. And the tiebreaker's up for grabs. Like, that game at Vikings is so crucial, because win and that sews up the division. Lose and that puts the Vikings at top of the NFC North with it all on the line at Ford Field in week 18. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Now, some of that is me just projecting a little bit my own insecurities, because this is a decimated team with no really good wide receivers right now, with Jefferson injured, although he looks like he's back? He's coming back, isn't he?
He'll be back by then.
Addison's been on fire the past couple of weeks.
He has. Yeah,
60-plus catches, no drops. He's one of six receivers in the NFL to be doing that this season so far.
If we lose the NFC North to Josh Dobbs, I will expect heads rolling from the Lions staff. Like, that is unacceptable. Completely and utterly unacceptable. So in no world do I want them at 9 wins by there, and I don't think they will. But even so, I will not accept a loss there to him, and I will not accept the loss of the division to him. Not a chance in hell.
It'd be really funny if we lost twice to...
It would not be funny at all.
Let me finish.
I don't care. I don't want to say lose twice and beat them in the playoffs. No. No.
It'd be really funny if we did.
No, it wouldn't, because we'd lose the NFC North, and I want that.
I want the NFC North as well. I'd be very angry too.
Second place in the NFC North and getting knocked out in the playoffs, you've done nothing. Like, absolutely nothing. So, no. I want the title and I want to beat them to pieces doing it.
Being realistic, I expect their offense to struggle mightily against Denver. I don't expect them to win that game, really. And I think Vegas are going to turn a corner in a big way. That is a 4-5 team whose offense has suddenly been unleashed, because the cancer has been dug out of the heart of that team, and they're gonna, you know, potentially get in the AFC playoff picture. The Raiders, like, it's gonna be fun to watch. And then they're playing the Bengals. If the Bengals don't win that game, I'm gonna be really pissed off. So we should easily get there. Anyway, final game to cover is at Dallas, which is potentially one of the most interesting games left on the schedule. And can we finally get this one done? Can we finally put them to bed?
I know I use the term a lot, but the Cowboys are frauds. I'm sorry, there are a lot of fraudulent teams this year. I called the Bills frauds, 4 losses, frauds. Even you must be calling them frauds at this point. What? They're awful. Give over. They are fraudulent as they get. I mean, what are they? They're near the bottom of that division now, aren't they?
Well, with the Pats in it, they're not going to be. But I think the Jets are technically ahead of them on win percentage.
So the Cowboys, again, they are not doing it when against good teams like the Dolphins. Every time the Dolphins play a half-decent defense that can deal with motion, they all of a sudden become a bang-average team. While the Cowboys, when they face a half-decent team, they become a bang-average team. They beat up on poor teams. I know we're going to AT&T and it's an away game and we've never won there, but, you know I've got a team that has no fear. It doesn't care where it's going. It doesn't care who it's playing. It doesn't care about history. It will go and get the job done. And I think that's fraudulent, and I think that team's fraudulent. And if we have sewn up the NFC North by then and we're on the roll that we think we are, I would expect us to go there and win that game. We have the offensive line to deal with Micah Parsons and co, and it should hopefully be healthy by then, scratch, and we should be playing well. And I think we've got the offensive weapons and defensive weapons to match them. I have not been impressed by them, and yesterday was just another, they came up short when the lights were bright. I don't fear them. I think we can go there and win.
Ryan?
Didn't know that.
Sorry.
I think they beat us quite comfortably. I think I just hate playing the Cowboys. Nothing ever seems to go right. And at this point, I think the Cowboys have got a lot to play for. I think they're potentially, it's them or Vikings that take the wild card. I think they're both going to be firmly in the race. So, yeah, I think we dropped that one. I'd say they're going to beat us comfortably. I'd say they're firing on all cylinders and we have a bad day at the office.
Ash?
I think Jerry might need to plan another trip to Amsterdam with his recent comments about how winning feels, because I can see us taking out that boogeyman and winning at Jerry's World. We said earlier, Dak just throws turnover. It's turning over the ball more than a bakery making apple turnovers in the morning. It's stupid. And yet he still gets rated higher than Goff by some people on QB rankings because he's got the history and all that. Not good. Let's go back to what Ant said. They lost to the Cardinals. This was the Cardinals without Kyler Murray and that. And they went there and lost. Any shred of respect I had for the Cowboys was lost that day. Before that, I was like, okay, yeah, maybe the Cowboys this year could challenge Philadelphia for that division and really make a statement. Then I went and did that, and I lost all my shred of respect because Dak has some good games, but considering what he has at disposal with CeeDee Lamb being finally used in the slot where he's best, Brandon Cook's doing some things on the outside, Jake Ferguson absolutely turning it on a tight end and vindicating my take last year. He has pieces on that offense. The defense is good. You've got Michael Parsons, who's one of, if not the best edge rusher in the league. Tank Lawrence on the other side. Trayvon Diggs, okay, yeah, he gives up big plays, but he can force turnovers. They've got pieces, but they can never put it together. Never put it together. So I can see us finally, with the talent we've got and the momentum and all the things behind us, to think, okay, yeah, this is our year. We get that monkey off our back and we finally beat the Cowboys in Dallas.
I mean, my hot take here, the 4 weeks before as they played the Seahawks, the Eagles, the Bills, the Dolphins, they might not even be in the discussion for the playoffs by the time we come rolling round. And then they got to play us as well. I agree with Ash. What have they done to show that they are a good football team? Nothing. Like, they've had multiple bad games this season and they have shied away from the light when it's brightest again, as they always do. We need to take this history out of the equation and we need to look at our two teams. They might have some of the more individually talented players like on there, like statistically, if you're doing a top 50 in the NFL, there might be more of their players in there than ours. But we got the better all-round team, hands down. And I am not scared about going there. And that schedule of theirs is brutal. So
with Dak specifically, I'll say this first and then I'll say about Dak. The Cowboys are the Buffalo Bills of the NFC. Like, that is just how I see them. In any given day, they will be any team in the league when they want to, but they can also lose to any team in the league if they want to. So they're just one of those teams. Dak is having one of his best seasons ever as a quarterback. And I know that seems really strange, but lowest in the league in turnover-worthy play with the snap qualifier. I think he's had five, and he's had five turnovers. So, like, it's been super unlucky with interceptions. Like, you don't expect every turnover-worthy play to be a turnover. That's just not how it works normally. He's got the lowest percentage of bad throws in the NFL by a considerable margin. Like, the guy is just not really making mistakes. And that's the only reason why Dallas have been in this on offense, because their running game has been awful. Like, you thought when they came in and they were only going to have Pollard as their leading running back, that that would make them more efficient because he's much better than Zeke. But when he's the lead guy, he's under 4 yards a carry. When he was up above five, when he was the change of pace guy. So they're a one-dimensional offense, and you need to be able to shut down CeeDee Lamb. And if you can do that, then you've got a really good shot. That's how other teams have beaten them, because Gallup hasn't been that. Although he seemed to be like he was coming back a little bit yesterday. I thought that he looked a bit more to form. And Ferguson, you mentioned, Ash, is looking really good. So that passing game can tread you. We need to match up in the passing game. But run game, we shouldn't fear them, which is where, obviously, they did a lot of damage in the past. Their defense, though, is so good. Sorry.
I love the Bills comparison that you've made there with the NFC. Both frauds. Completely and utterly fraudulent. They're very flashy. You know, they're like a pic, you know, a picture of a hotel in a magazine. Looks all great there, and then you get there and it's been awful. It's terrible. They've had a soup up job done to them. They've been photoshopped. Oh,
never mind. No, not about Photoshop. The photos are lovely. You get there and it's under construction.
Yeah, exactly. That is what they are. You know, I've said this about the Bills for years. Ignore the running game. Josh Allen turns the ball over too many times to be good enough to win games on his own. And for the last 3 years now, I've been harping on this. And 3 years, they've been bad and they've flattered to deceive. Cowboys are exactly the same. They flattered to deceive. They look good. They sound good. But when it comes to it, they're not actually that good. They're all hype and bluster. I think that's a perfect comparison.
They are good on defense. So if you have a look at what they've done so far, Daron Bland is one of the revelations of this season, any position. For me, DeMarcus Lawrence has been fantastic in the middle of the defense, Odunsuwa, or however you say that name. He's been great. I think Marquise Bell has been fantastic. That's not even to mention Micah Parsons, who's maybe the defensive player of the year. Like, that defense is legit, and we've got to combat that. And can we do that? The run defense is the only thing which has been slightly suspect. And so actually, slightly, I do think it's a good matchup for us. Because can we just run it down their throats, control the clock, force Dak to be one-dimensional and just play zone coverage? Like, I think I can see the recipe for us to win this game handily, but I can also see them destroying us. The only thing I don't think it will be is close.
I mean, we say this, but the Cardinals put 30 down on them. I mean, you know, they either have a good day where they give up no points or they give up loads. The 49ers... put a 40 burger down on them. Even the Rams with nobody put 20 down on them. The Eagles put 30 on them. Individually good players, but they're giving up points. They're the odd game where they're doing a shutout, but when the Cardinals can put points down on you, there's a way to beat them. That's not elite. That's just individually good stuff. And individually, they have some great players. So, but they're not that... We shouldn't fear them anymore. Yeah. All these teams we feared for no reason or whatever. I mean, respect them. Don't fear them. They're there to be beaten. In Jerry World, I think we're gonna be the team in form. I don't even know if they're gonna be in the playoff picture come then with that schedule they've got going forward. I mean, they've got the Panthers and the Giants next, which are maybe a couple of dubs, but you struggle in one of them, I think they're gonna be out of it.
All right, so that's what we think of the rest of our schedule. As I mentioned earlier, it's 30th in the NFL in terms of strength of schedule. So looks like we could be pretty good when it comes down to it. Projections for players, guys. I kind of teed this up earlier, but upwards or downwards projections for players, whether rookie or depth, injury related, and players who need to show up for the rest of the season to make the roster. I'm not saying who needs to make it. I'm saying, what do you think is going to happen? Is there someone who's been on a bit of a tear you expect to kind of regress to the mean a little bit? Are there players who haven't really shown it yet that you think are going to come good? Do you think someone has been really good and they're going to ascend even further? What's happening with some of these guys? Take it wherever you want. And whoever's got a strong take, just go ahead.
I need Jonah to play the rest of the season and play well for me to sign him to the extension we were discussing at the start of the season. Because if anything, what the past couple of weeks have maybe shown is that we can get pretty much equitable play out of Graham Glasgow for a quarter of the price that Jonah probably will be commanding at the end of the season for an extension. So unless he comes back and plays the level we want him to, I could let him walk and test free agency and maybe see what numbers he can get. Maybe he comes back and maybe it's an Alexander Loney situation where he finds out that maybe him and his agent, the Valiant Kings, play a bit too high in the league, is low on him, and he comes back and takes that sort of slightly cheaper deal that you wouldn't expect when he first enters free agency. But that's what I need from him now, because Glasgow's been good. Saul's okay, yeah. Didn't grade out well by BFF, but that's because he was a right tackle for one against the Seahawks because we had so many injuries there. We have pieces that maybe can replace him waiting. He's got to show that he's willing to fight for his spot now and if and when he comes back.
I think James Houston, when he returns, will come back and be an absolute phenom. Like I said, I want to get him back in getting back in 5.5 weeks? I don't know, like five to 6 weeks. Like, I kind of want him back then, December. Realistically, I think Romeo, Charles and Julian are all gone next year. Honestly, I'm cleaning house on that edge room because it's been crap. So underwhelmed. Hutchinson has needed some genuine help, and I genuinely don't think he gets it other than James. I think Kaminsky hopefully picks up and Josh Pascal eventually kicks in. But one of them has got to step up at the end of the year, because it just feels like a very topsy-turvy line. It just feels really unbalanced. And it just feels right now it's so easy to take it in the way. Like, you just hold him, for God's sake. And then let a tight end smack him in the face or a running back. And it's worked in like 3 or 4 of the games. It's really frustrating. But yeah, I'd like to think Kaminsky will come good. Pascal will improve. I think down, I just really think that we're going to struggle to get... Jameson's not going to get good numbers between now and the end of the season. I just don't see it. I think he'll get a few scores. And I think he'll have some splash plays, but he isn't going to get a large workload. Like I say, maybe, I don't know, he could come good at a playoff run, but I just feel like it's going to be tough sledding for him. Not for the want of trying, but it'll be hard. I think Khalif as well. Everything is pointing to me towards that he is going to fizzle out. I think he's just going to limp to the end of the year. I think he's going to become a bit of a non-factor, if anything. Like I said, special teams, he's not getting the returns. His targets could start to go like DPJ, Josh Allen, Ryle, Porter. A lot of mouths to feed. Brock Wright as well. I kind of want him to have a good end to the season. It feels bad to say that he's invisible. And like I say, he is the truly forgotten man. That's kind of sad, like I say. But I just don't see where he fits in right now. Like I say, not the elite pass catcher, not the elite blocker. It's just a shame, yeah. I just feel like many mouths to feed and some guys are going to struggle to the end of the year.
I don't know. There's quite a few with me. I think second half of the season, I think Jameer's going to explode as he gets integrated into this offense. I would expect his numbers to pick up. I mean, to be honest, I say I expect his numbers to pick up. I looked at his yardage the other day, and I think if he stays on par for what he's on, he's going to get about 1,100 yards for the year. I mean, that's not shabby for a rookie year, especially when you've got a running back one in the room, like who's going to be taking a lot of the snaps there. But I think his production will go up. I think J-Mo's production will go up as well. I'm hopeful that it will. And I'm hopeful that coaches are going to try and scheme him into games more, manufacture touches for him. You know, I get sharing the wealth round and, you know, Raymond and Reynolds and that getting touches, but J-Mo's going to be a critical part of our offense going forward for a long time. Well, that's at least what we want him to be. And to, for that to happen, we have to give him touches. We have to get his confidence up. We have to start scheming him into this offense. Like, it's no good just giving the bit part guys receptions and that all the time. In the long term, it's just not going to work. We've got to get our elite guys in there. So I think his production will go up because I think they will realize that we've got to get him involved and that he's going to do better. With the offensive line, I mean, I'm pretty much going to hammer down the injuries now with all three of them. So Taylor, Jonah, and Frank. Like, Frank's going to become a problem now as well. If this toe issue becomes too much of a hint, we can't afford to lose these guys all the time. We've got to have healthy offensive linemen. And I love what Taylor and Frank have done for this. This isn't really necessary on Taylor, he's missed a tiny bit, but we need to show that they've got physical durability. In Jonah's case, I don't really care. This is the first stretch of games he's missed since he's been here. He's been pretty much an ever-present guy. There was an issue with concussion here and there, but I don't mind him. But Frank, it's getting concerning. He can't afford to miss time. He needs to have a good end to the season. He's had a couple of dodgy games. Same with Taylor. I wanted to see him finish the season well. Obviously, Penne is just a monster. He's just going to never play anything but elite. It's the same with Amon-Ra. And then on defense, I guess you're looking for the edges to step up. With Ryan, you know, Charles, Julian, and Romeo were all holding hands on their way out the door at the minute. And I don't want that because they're good players. But someone's got to stand up and help Hutch. Pascal's obviously been injured. I think he will get better as time goes along as well. So, yeah, I think it'd be Pascal on defense and Gibbs on offense, the ones I would expect to go up. Down, I don't know. Can Laporta keep this up all year? I don't know. I mean, if it goes to, I don't really care. If as long as he's consistent, that's fine. I don't know if he can keep this volume up all year, but, you know, it'd be a minor thing. But outside of that, no, I think people are playing at a good level. I don't think they're going to drop off.
So for me,
what kind of contract can Jerry Jacobs get himself in the second half of the year? Is he going to get paid like a cornerback too? Is he going to get, like I say, is he going to test the market and see, could he go get somewhere? Could he be a cornerback one somewhere?
This is dangerous because he's a massive culture guy and he is an example of what you want this team to be. Like, you could be a first-round pick or an undrafted free agent. You've got to retain your guys, and that's critical going forward. I wouldn't let him walk. If it means giving him a little bit more money to be cornerback, if it means giving him above-average cornerback two money, I'll do it in a heartbeat. It's the same with Jonah. I want to keep Jonah here on a good deal as well because you develop and invest, and you look at the shite quality of the offensive lines around the NFL now. It's hard to find good offensive linemen, good, consistent offensive linemen. You can soon be a bad team. You've got to keep these guys. You draft and develop. That's what you do. This is what it's all about now, drafting and developing. And you're at the part where you've got to start paying guys. You don't let them walk out the door. Especially in Jerry's case, you do not let him walk.
So Jerry's going to qualify, I think, for the fifth-year veteran salary benefit thing that Will Harris had. But we're going into year four, aren't we, with him? So he's going to be a restricted free agent. So I'd be perfectly willing to slap a second-round tender on him, which will give him about $2.5 million. That doesn't let him leave the building. Or even a right of first refusal tender, and then if someone offers him, just offer him more. But part of me would also be perfectly at home giving him 3 years, $15 million. I think that would adequately show how much we appreciate him without overpaying. Any of those options are absolutely fine. If we got a second round tender in there and someone poached him for a second rounder, I'd feel awful. But I think a second is higher than him. It's about where his value is, probably. It would suck to lose him, but I think it's roughly... I don't think anyone would pay a first for him. I think that's too rich, but a second might well be it. So I think that would be good. But in terms of ups and downs, I expect Jahmyr Gibbs to just have his production fall a little bit. And the only reason for that is that Montgomery is going to be playing 65% of snaps. And like, I don't know what to tell people about this, but like Gibbs is getting great production because Montgomery's out. Montgomery's back. And Montgomery had fantastic production in moments where we've been struggling. Red zone, hard yardage, you know, stuff where we haven't been that great. Monty's going to be the guy. And Gibbs will be the change of pace guy. So his production will fall. I don't think on a per down basis his production will fall. I think it will actually increase. But overall, statistically, I think it will just naturally fall because he'll be getting less reps. Josh Reynolds just can't be this good for this long. Like, he has a passer rating when targeted of 148 or something like that. It's one of the highest passer ratings when targeted in the NFL this year. So he can't be that good. On offense, I also think going up will be, and I think this is the reason why I've brought him in, Donovan Peoples-Jones. I don't think statistically he's going to have big numbers, but we have struggled in the red zone throwing the ball. And he is a contested catch guy. Look out for him getting 4 or 5 touchdowns down the stretch. Just short yardage situations where we go and throw the ball. I think he's going to be one of the guys we're going to focus on because we've got to change something. And that's why he's here. That's what he's going to do. On defense, I'm going to be a believer in Benito. I think Benito's going to turn up next to Aleem. Someone's got to. And for my money, even though he's been the lowest ranked of Bugs, Onsarike, and Martin and him, I don't believe that. From what I've seen, eye test wise, I think Jones has been the best of them. And I expect him to ascend a little bit. Anzalone, I just don't think he can keep this pace up. Like, I think that him being healthy this long has been fantastic. And I think it's been a big contributor to him doing this well. But it's just a lot to ask for him when he's... I don't think he is a top... In terms of production so far this year, he's a top 10 linebacker. But I don't think he is actually a top 10 linebacker. I don't think it's an insult to say to him, I don't think you're one of the best players in the NFL. So, yeah. And if Ifeanyi Melifonwu, expect him healthy again after playing so bloody well on limited reps, he's going to come in relief for either Walker or Joseph and really show up. I thought he was fantastic earlier in the year, and I think he's going to continue on that. Those are my guys. Any other thoughts from you guys?
Antoine Green, could he see a turn up in the second half? Is he just a non-factor?
Non-factor. I think the DPJ trade has made him a non-factor.
Broderick Martin, he's got to kick on the second half. Like you say, because Levi, non-factor. Bugs, like, what the hell's going on? Like, it feels like we're heading for a... We're parting ways of Bugs at some point, aren't we? It feels like the relationship feels tumultuous. I don't think Bugs will be around much longer, if I'm honest. I say help scratching. I think Broderick Martin actually will be a big winner in the second half of the season. I'm not saying he's going to play well. I think he'll struggle, but I think he will see lion's share. I think they'll just stick with him. Even if he struggles, you don't take a guy in the third round to just pull him out when he does bad. If he struggles, they'll still leave him there and they'll just let him to overcome it. I think he's about to get a big lion's share next to Lee McNeil.
Anyone else have a name they want to throw out there? All right, one last question then. I promised it at the end of the show. And if you have any questions for after we finish the audio pod, get them in now, just at me so that I can see it. Manningtown on Twitch asked at the top of the show, how many pieces away are the Lions from making a Super Bowl appearance? Obviously, this is related to the trade deadline and multiple national commentators saying, They can be competitive as they are. They could even threaten that sort of thing, but they're not a couple of players or one or two players away from being, you know, the best team in the NFL and really kind of being the team. What do you think? How many players are the Lions away from being the team in the NFL?
2.5. Having an elite kicker like a Matt Gay or Justin Tucker, I think that would take us above next level. And a really, really high level edge too. I say another bucket edge. And maybe another corner. So cut 2.5 to 3. I think those three positions, just one extra body in a bit of depth for an elite level start like a defensive line. And a game-winning kicker I trust in a Super Bowl. Would I trust in the NFC Championship right now Riley Patterson to make a 55-yard game winner? I would not. Right now, I don't.
No.
Like I say, but yeah, 2 or 3 players, and I think we're right in there. We're in the top 3 teams in the league trying to win it.
I'm also at 3, and I agree with the edge in the corner. But for me, it's a consistent, reliable outside wide receiver. I know we traded for DPJ, but he's going to be a role player. I love Josh Reynolds. Good player. But he isn't an AJ Brown. He isn't a Jamar Chase. You look at the teams that made the Super Bowl in the past couple of years, they've got someone like that on the outside that can threaten a cornerback on all 3 levels of the field, do contested catches, do the deep threat stuff. And we don't have that. I do accept the point about the Ryan Patterson, but I think for us, if it comes to a situation where we're in those, we're not going to go for the field goal. We're going to try and go for it on 4th down and continue, because that's the kind of team we are. Unless we get into that automatic zone of 35, 40, 45 yards, I think we're going to go for it because Dan and Fip and that know what Patterson is, and they're not going to put him in a situation where you have to do that. They'll go another way because they think the team will do better going for a 4th and 4 when it could have been a 55-yard field goal because they think we've got a better chance.
Okay, but Ash, what about 1st down and 10, 2 seconds remaining from their 38 down 1? That is the situation we're talking about here. It's not trying to convert for a 4th down. It's game on the line, no time remaining, and you are outside, you are in Hail Mary or long field goal range. Like that could be the difference between winning a playoff game or not. And it's horrible to boil it down to it, because for the last couple of years, we've just been pretty relaxed on kicker. We'll find our guy eventually. Don't worry about it. We want to go for it on 4th down anyway. Who cares? And Riley's automatic from 45 and less. But when it comes down to like the really nitty gritty games, sometimes you face,
What have the Patriots had for years? Solid kickers.
Yeah. Not anymore, but yeah.
No, but when they were winning Super Bowls and they were a good
Janikowski,
team.
Janikowski, yeah.
When they were a good team, like they were winning Super Bowls. When the Colts won Super Bowl, good kickers. You know,
there's not so many. That's the problem. There's not that many good ones. You have your elite ones, but they stay with their teams. It's one of them.
No, but the question is, how many players are you off? It's not can you get those players, it's how many positions are you off from being a team that can go to a Super Bowl, and kicker is one of the, you know, he's not clutch enough to win his playoff games. Like, he's not going to be a Tucker. So, you know, you do need a kicker like that. I mean, I'm probably more down on this. I still think we're 6-7 players away. I still think we're a good put. Because what Brad not trading for anybody in this window, as well, has been sensible, but what it also says, because when you're trading for guys like the Seahawks, you think you're about there. That's where you're 1 or 2 players off. That's where you're 2 or 3 players off. That's where there's not much left to go. That's why you do it. Brad not doing it shows me that they still think they're a while off. Yeah, this, well, at least a year off. I've said next year is going to be the year when the first real window for it opens. And you look at the team now. You know, we're going to have an exodus at edge. I think we need at least 2 more edge players in here to complement Aiden and Pascal going forward. You know, not just certified pass rushers, but you need depth in the room there. I think you do need another corner. I think you need a kicker. I think you need an outside receiver.
I think you're going to need another offensive lineman somewhere along the way because ours are banged up and hurt, maybe two, who knows. I still think we're 6 or 7 away yet. That's where the next draft comes in. You've got 4 picks in the top 90. You've got some guys who are going to be able to contribute right away. You've got a good funding free agency to go out and get some guys as well. I still think we're 6 or 7 players away. I do. I think, you know, with people going this offseason as well, like Howell be gone, players like this have gone, you've got to replace them. Yeah, we're 6, 7, maybe 8 players away yet.
Just want to say thank you to Dan Pask for subscribing at Tier 1 for his 20th month, saying thanks, guys, for setting up for an exciting second half of the year. Go Lions. Thanks, Dan. I am with Ant. And I wonder if his number is even slightly conservative. We could win the Super Bowl with this team. Like, I don't think it's out of the realms of possibility that we do win it with this team. But there's a difference between, you know, being confident that we are in that sort of top 3, top 4 territory and we're going to be competing for every year because we deserve to, and thinking that we could be frisky. We can be frisky. But outside wide receiver, I mean, maybe another tight end. Not necessarily Sam Laporta style, but I don't think Brock Wright has done enough this year. And James Mitchell is in real danger of being cut come the end of the year. Like, when Shane Zylstra comes back, I think Zylstra showed more last year than Mitchell's done in his career, potentially. Zylstra got 3 in one game last year and then did some other little bits and pieces.
All our tight ends did. Mitchell did not drop a pass last season.
Yeah, I know, but Mitchell has been healthy all year, most of the year, and he's been healthy most of the year. He got injured recently, right?
He had an injury in camp that was reoccurred, and then he's also still coming off the ACL, which is why he's been inactive most of the time.
Fair enough. Backup offensive lineman who can come into a starter role, even a first round guy, don't care. But like that needs to happen. Another interior guy to go alongside Aleem would do wonders for this team, because if we could have Aleem and another guy at that sort of level, I mean, the Eagles have like 4 of them at that level or better. Like, that's the sort of level we're talking about. They've got 4 Aleem McNeils or better in the interior. Like, that's scary.
We need to start a disinformation campaign to tank Jazaine Newton's draft stock.
Yes, we need Jazaine Newton for sure.
Get him and Aleem here, and our line will wreck shit up for years. So start the disinformation now, folks. Tweet that he's terrible.
Okay, so listing it off, wide receiver 1X type, tight end 2, backup offensive lineman, interior defensive lineman, edge rusher, maybe a linebacker, but I think we might be okay. But I want a cornerback 1. I really want a cornerback 1. Like, Sutton's a perfect 2, and he's a good low-end 1. He's unremarkable, he does his job. That's great as a 2, but you kind of want a playmaking, exciting guy who's going to get some turnovers and whatever. And Jerry's great as that guy, but he's not a 1. So I want another guy there. And safety. Walker and Joseph are great. I think Melifonwu is a great backup, but we just look so different with Chauncey in, and I don't see him coming back. So I think we kind of need another safety too. So that puts me at wide receiver, tight end, offensive lineman, interior, edge, maybe a linebacker, cornerback, safety. I'm 8 away. A kicker, 9 away. And that's not even the backups. Like, if you talk about the Eagles, they've got like 4 pass rushers and 4 interior guys who are at the level of the guys we have, bar Hutch. And San Francisco, although they've been awful defensive line-wise recently, like, they're at that sort of level as well in terms of depth.
How bad does their trade for Chase Young look now? Just losing games all the time and spending all that money.
Mm.
See, I'm taking all your points, but for me, the reason my number's so low is because there's no way you can ever have a perfect team. You're always going to have a weakness. So look at last year, the Eagles, great defense, great offense. Can you name one of their linebackers from last year? Can you, other than CJ, GJ, can you name their other starting safety? For me, it's all going to I agree. Those are what we need to make a perfect team, but that's never going to happen. You're always going to have a weakness because of the salary cap, because of players wanting to play if they're that good. So for me, yeah, it's all well and good avenues, but you've got to balance it. We're always going to have a weakness. So that's why my number is probably lower, because I can handle perhaps having Anzalone, Campbell, Barnes and Rodrigo being our four off-ball linebackers if we reach a Super Bowl. I'm happy having Kirby, Tracy, potentially healthy CJ, GJ, if he being our safeties in the Super Bowl. I'm happy having Sutton, Jerry, potentially. Yeah, I'd like a cornerback, but if it's those two, if we play a Super Bowl, they are starting corners, I'm not too unhappy. Because for me, that's the reason I was like, oh, with the kicker, because I'm trying to balance sort of, yeah, it'd be great to have a Justin Tucker on our team, but they're so rare to find that I'm happy having a Patterson and setting up our special teams to maybe, aside from, yeah, okay, 1 second left, you need a kick. Even Tucker misses those. Tucker's missed an extra point or two this season, and he's missed a couple. Not even he's automatic. So for me, I agree. If we had all of those, we had a great backup offensive line that. But for me, that's the reason I didn't list them, because I know it's going to be impossible to get that. So for me, I'm disregarding those. I'm happy to have those weaknesses. I'm picking up where we really need those little tiny things that give us that edge. So yeah, I love if we could have traded for Tucker, I'd have loved it in a way if the price was right. But for me, it's about what is that price and is it right for setting us up for now and for that future. So that's why perhaps I'm not here for another. Yeah, it'd be great to have another defensive tackle to pass rush game lean, but weighing that against, okay, you're having that, but then somewhere else. That's why my number's lower, and that's why I really said those positions, because it's just going to be impossible. You can never have the perfect team.
The question was, how many players are you off getting a Super Bowl? Not. It's just real.
Yeah,
it's not
me,
a question of realism. It's not
for
a question.
Because as I say,
it's not about how perfect the team is or how the cap measures up. It's how many are you from a legitimate Super Bowl team?
For me, it's three or four. Because every Super Bowl team has a weakness.
But if you have a look at San Francisco and the Eagles in terms of the depth and quality of the players they have, they are that much better than us. Ergo, we are that many players away from being as good as them, which is maybe the bar. Do you know what I mean? I hear what you're saying, Ash, but I just don't agree. I'm with Ant. Like, they all have that strength in depth. So saying it's a luxury to do that isn't really the point. They have it. So if we don't have it, then we're behind.
Exactly. You know, you just have to take the question into account.
See, that's what I'm saying. You're saying for you have to have that depth to get to a Super Bowl. For me, you don't.
The question is, what do you need theoretically to get to a Super Bowl? Not what does the cap allow? It's just, what do you theoretically
need?
We're way overthinking this question.
Yeah, no, so I think what Ash is... Are you saying if we can make a Super Bowl right now, basically, is kind of that point?
Yeah.
Almost. Yeah, so I said early on, like, yeah, we could be frisky. This team absolutely can make a Super Bowl right now. It is frisky, and I've got to have a bit of injury luck and to ride the crest of a wave. Goff's got to play out of his skin, and we've got to get some better production from some of the existing players, and we can absolutely make a Super Bowl. But the point is, can we... How far are we away from Kansas City's record of making the AFC Championship game 5 years in a row? That's kind of like what we're talking about here. Like, do you think that we can make it year on year on year with where we're at? And maybe you do, but I think that when you're arguing the frisky end of we need a bit of luck, that luck then doesn't fall to you every time. Like, we just need to draft well for the next few years and then maybe in a couple of years' time start making some ballsy trades and then maybe start pushing the cap a little bit and taking these players on. 2 or 3 years from now, we could be that loaded team where everyone's going, that's the bar. And we can probably do that for about 3 or 4 years in a row. But we're not there yet.
I just believe we can't. Well, we've already got that drafting for me. That's what I'm saying. I'm not...
Yeah.
You can have the shopping list, but for me, that shopping list, you're never going to fulfill that shopping list year on year on year. That's what I'm trying to say, like, you're always going to have a weakness. So having the shopping list, I agree. We, in the long run, if we can get all of those, it'd be great. But when we get one, for me, we'll get about half of that in. And then by the time you load up on that other half, you'll be still needing those pieces again. So we might need a new tight end in a couple of years when Laporta perhaps gets a bit too expensive for us if that happens. But when we get that new tight end, we'll then suddenly need a new corner. That's my problem. That's what I'm trying to say is it'd be great to suddenly fill that entire shopping list. But for me, that's we never will. So I'm not going to set out and say we need exactly all of this to make a Super Bowl because that's never going to happen. And we can still reach a Super Bowl with a weakness at linebacker, a weakness at tight end and such. That's what
I hear you. We were arguing over semantics, I think, at this point. So, yeah, I think we're arguing two different things. But fair enough. We've had a few questions in, and there's hopefully a few more questions coming in now, you guys. So get them in, and I'm going to end the audio show now, and then we're going to take those questions on YouTube and Twitch. If you want some extra time with us, go ahead and do that. Our next show on the audio pod is going to be the College Football Podcast, and just remind us of what fun stuff we've got coming up.
Yeah, it'll be a review of week 10 of the college football season, and then we'll be looking ahead to week 11. We get into the business end now, so it's where the stakes start getting high. So, yeah, come join us for that.
Then the next show on the main show is going to be the Chargers preview show. I'm hoping that we're going to have the Chargers writer for NFL Scotland joining us. So Sean Black, he's been on a few of our shows before. He's really good value, actually. So do come and join us for that. Then Sunday, going to be me and Ashy, if you're free. I haven't actually checked.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'll be free, yeah.
For the live reaction show for the Chargers game, and then the review will be Monday as usual. At this point, before I tell you about our socials and where you can find us, I just want to give a shout out to the Detroit Lions podcast and Pride of Detroit in the month of November. The DLP had their 24-hour live show 2 days ago, I think it was, on Saturday. They're raising funds for St. Jude's Children's Hospital. They do that 24-hour stream once a year, and they're absolutely fantastic doing it with some really great content, some really good guests. Go and watch it. Go and donate. That'd be absolutely fantastic. And Pride of Detroit for November are also doing their charity drive. It happens for the entire month, so no big one shows to go and watch for them. But go and watch their stuff. Go and donate to the worthwhile causes that they are driving money for. It's a really cool thing that I want to do, but in a unique, interesting way. And I just haven't found the right medium to do that. So in lieu of us doing that, go and watch them and go and do some good work donating to their causes. Socials for us, you can find us on Rural The Lions UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And the group on Facebook for worldwide fans is Detroit Lions Fans UK, One Pride Worldwide. The website, rotluk.com. Find us there. Ash's preview articles, my review articles, and opinion pieces all the way through the year. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us 5 stars on your podcast provider. Just remains for me to thank Ant and Ash and Ryan for doing this with me. I'm Matthew Turner. We'll see you for the College Football Podcast later on the week. For now, let's go, Lions. One Pride.
One Pride.
One Pride.